Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Micro ISV Show here on Channel 9. I'm Michael Lehman, Technology Evangelist for the Microsoft Corporation, along with my co-host Bob Walsh, who's the Managing Director of Safari Software, a Micro ISV company. I run something called Project GlidePath, which is a Micro ISV evangelism program, which you can find at projectglidepath.net on the internet. And Bob is not only a Micro ISV at safarisoftware.com, he's also a published author with two books, Micro ISV from Vision to Reality, which you can find out at mymicroisv.com, and a new book about blogging called Clear Blogging, which you can find at clearblogging.com. Today on the show, we have Dr. Edward Hollowell, who goes by Ned, who's written a book called Crazy Busy. So welcome to the show.
Nice to be with you. Dr. Hollowell, I've been looking forward to this interview for a long time. For the people out there who are listening to this podcast, you may be wondering why a child and adult psychiatrist with over 20 years worth of experience teaching at Harvard Medical School is someone that you need to listen to. Believe me, you need to listen to this man. Here's why. Have you noticed in your life how more and more of the time is spent getting less and less done? Are you noticing that you have a difficulty in concentrating and carrying out and completing tasks? Do you notice that everything seems to be something of a blur and that at no time can you find what you need to just focus on one particular thing and get it done to completion? Well, if you're suffering those symptoms, you probably have what Dr. Hollowell would call crazy busy. Think of it as acquired attention deficit disorder. So I guess really the place to start is, how do you define crazy busy, Dr. Hollowell?
Well, you're crazy busy when you have more to do than time to do it. And that includes just about everybody, at least until they get a handle on it. When you, in a sense, you become the victim of your own enthusiasms, and you don't say no, you can't resist, and the next thing you know, you're overbooked, overstretched, and about to snap, which is the subtitle of my book. Technology, you see, the great blessing that it is, has broken down all the boundaries that used to sort of put us to bed at night. The day used to have an end. I have a lawyer who said it was when FedEx wouldn't pick up any later. It was 8 o'clock in New York. Well, the day no longer has an end. You know, he says, I have clients who email me at 3 a.m. and expect me to turn around the project, you know, and so theoretically I can be available 24/7. Well, you know, the brain won't allow for that. You know, you do have to sleep. And yet, thanks to our wonderful technology, we can work anytime, anywhere, always. And what you see is the brain, the human brain, being asked to process exponentially more data points than ever before in human history. I mean, this is all new because the technology is new. It's never been possible to ask the brain to do what we're asking our brains to do today. We are just processing voluminously more data points every hour than we used to do, you know, in a week. And so, and again, it's a good thing. I'm not a Luddite saying, let's go back to the good old days. Not at all. This is incredibly exciting. I mean, it's a phenomenally wonderful time to live, particularly if you're a self-starter, an entrepreneur, if you're someone who, you know, wants to, you know, grow fast and get a lot done. You know, now's your time. But, big but. If you're not careful, you will underperform due to overload. I wrote an article for the Harvard Business Review called Overloaded Circuits, Why Smart People Underperform. And you see it all the time. Brilliant, gifted people messing up, not because they're not smart, not because they don't know what to do, not because their strategy is poor, simply because they're overloaded, they're overcommitted. And your brain, as you reach a point where the more you take on, your performance starts to deteriorate without your even really being aware of it. And it's a phenomenon that a lot of people don't recognize. And when they enter into it, their solution is just to suck it up and try harder. Well, if you're digging a ditch, sucking it up and trying harder may help. But if you're using your brain, and that's what people are using these days, to do your work, sucking it up and trying harder ain't going to cut it. Your performance will simply tail off. You'll make errors. you'll forget, you'll offend people because you'll be in a bad mood, you'll be irritable, and you simply won't reach your goals in the way that you really ought to. You'll be selling yourself short because you've allowed yourself to get so overcommitted.
I'm so glad to hear you say that. You know, I, at least for me, I've been struggling with this for years and beginning to wonder if it's, you know, onset of early Alzheimer's, rare disease from the tropics, what?
Oh, no, but, you know, one of the most common reasons people see their primary care physician these days is what you just said, the memory loss, early Alzheimer's, and it's none of that. It's simply overloaded circuits. And your brain simply can't hold the number of data points in working memory that we're asking it to hold.
Well, let's break that down a little finer. First off, is it the internet? Is that the straw that broke the camel's back?
Well, it's not just that. I sort of date it to this beginning of this phenomenon when cell phones became routine, when everybody had a cell phone. But you throw it all in. You throw in maybe the fax got going, and then cell phones, and then the BlackBerry, and then certainly the internet, email. There was a time when you got mail once a day, snail mail. Remember, it would come once a day, and you'd run to open your letters. You know, even if you knew there were bills and there were going to be boring, unpleasant things. But we love to unwrap messages. You know, so now we get them every second. You know, now the mail never stops. You know, and between voicemail and email, you can spend your whole day just answering messages.
So is it I guess I'm trying to break down kind of the categories, and there are a couple that strike me. One is decisions. Do we have so many more things to choose from in our lives than people 10 years ago, let alone 100 years ago?
Absolutely. Every one of these messages carries with it the presumption that you'll do something with it, and that's a decision. It may be a trivial decision. Nonetheless, it is a decision, and that takes a certain number of calories of mental energy, and you don't have an infinite amount of mental energy.
Okay. The second part I see is information. You know, I took a look at my bookshelf over the weekend, and I realized that if I did nothing else but just sat and read 8 hours a day for the next 6 months, I wouldn't get through the books I've already ordered and I already own, because the information load at this point is so high, let alone what I would go out and look at blogs, websites, flash sites, all the whole canal, the whole ball, you know, huge amount of information that's out there. So is information in and by itself, when you say data point, is that a component of it?
Absolutely. And you put your finger on, you know, it used to be in years, in generations gone by, getting information, that was the work. Now, it's choosing which information you want to get because it's just so available. It comes at you like a tsunami. You know, we live one keystroke on Google away from all that's ever been known or thought in human history. You know, so selection becomes crucial. You know, and what you just said, the books on your bookshelf, what happens is people become ever more superficial in their digesting of new knowledge. You know, sort of it's become sound bites. You read the abstract or you read the blurb. Reading a whole book, who has time to do that? You know, in my book, Crazy Busy, I say we eat books now. We sort of grab a bite here and grab a bite there, and we consider the book read. Well, what happens then is you take on more and more and more information, you take it on in much more superficial ways. And then, you know, what happens similarly as you manage time this way, when you're so overcommitted time-wise, mm-hmm. what you don't have time to do is think. See, thinking is becoming a disappearing art. You ask someone, where do you do your best thinking? Rarely do they say at work. They say in the shower, you know, or on a weekend, you know, sitting at the ball game or something like that, if they have time to go to a ball game. But after all, what the human brain does better than at least most computers, better than most machines, is think. And yet we're not preserving the conditions under which we can allow our brain to do that unique activity to our advantage.
You know, this is such an important point for micro-ISVs especially, because what they start with is they start with a blank piece of paper. And on that piece of paper, they're going to decide what the software they're going to sell is, you know, platform decisions, feature decisions. I mean, they have to think through all these things, plus the business stuff, plus the technical stuff. And what I see a lot of people struggling with is they're so busy trying to keep up, they don't have time to think. And I personally wonder, what is this doing as far as our, let's call it our society, you know, the society of people where you find people with cell phones and PCs and BlackBerries and 500 channels on their HD and all the rest of that. What's that doing to us as a society?
Well, I think it's profound. I think your question is a profound one. What's happened is a kind of paradox where we are super connected electronically, but we're disconnecting interpersonally. The kind of in-depth relationships, either emotional or intellectual, with a topic or with a person, the kind of in-depth relationships that you need in order to thrive in life are in jeopardy because they're getting swamped by overcommitted schedules and by information overload. Now, the good news is, I don't want people to get depressed, because the good news is this is one of these huge, profound problems that you can actually solve. You know, it's not like global warming where you have to wait for policies to change and a group effort. You can, in your own life, solve this problem. And you know, for a problem as big as it is, it's nice that, you know, it is solvable. But the first step is to recognize it and not think, see, so many people think, well, it's my fault. I should work harder. You know, it's like, you know, yeah, I know I'm supposed to exercise. That kind of, they just feel guilty about it and say, I should work harder. I should get an organizer or something like that. And they go to Staples and buy some equipment that they never use, you know, and they just feel guilty. And then they try running harder and faster and harder and faster, and they can't understand why they're falling further and further behind.
Well, let me play devil's advocate for a second here,
mm-hmm.
because, a lot of people are going to say, well, wait a sec. You know, I look at the teenagers and the 20-somethings, and they've got one hand on the cell, one hand on the computer. If they took off their shoes, they'd be texting somebody. They're doing multitasking like there's no tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting there looking like, you know, a poor, dumb human being 101,
mm-hmm.
you know, 1.0 version here, and they're able to multitask with mm-hmm. with finesse.
Yeah.
Now, is that an illusion?
Oh no! That's great, and that's wonderful. I think it's great, and they're able to keep up with friends and have these networks that are great. What they're doing though is superficial, they would be the first to say so. If they had to write a paper on Kant, they couldn't be sitting there doing that. If they had to write a program, they couldn't be sitting there texting their friends. The program would not be a very sophisticated program. You know, if they had to solve a geometry problem, they couldn't be texting their friends. It's wonderful the way they stay in touch with people. And I have three kids, and I watch them do it, and they're more adept with their thumbs than I'll ever be. And it's great. I'm not saying turn back the clock. I'm not shaking my head and saying, oh, the current generation is going to hell. Not at all. It's wonderful. But when they have serious work to do, they've got to stop texting. Your brain, it just can't multitask in depth. It can multitask superficially, and really, it can never multitask. What we mean when we say multitask really is we mean shift from one task to the next in rapid succession. You know, so switch from one screen to the next in rapid succession, and that's what we mean by multitasking. You're not really simultaneously attending to two things at once.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do, you make errors. Let me tell you a quick anecdote, because your audience will enjoy this. As I mentioned to you earlier, the first people who invited me to come give a talk after Crazy Busy came out was the Gates Foundation. So I came out to Seattle, and the woman who brought me in, this wonderful woman, she said, I used to work at Starbucks, and the way I became an executive there, and she said, I'm a mom as well, the way I was able to climb the competitive pyramid at Starbucks and take care of my kids was I mastered the art of the BlackBerry. And she said, I became so adept with my BlackBerry, I could be standing in the kitchen using my BlackBerry with my right hand and stirring dinner with my left hand. And she said, and usually that's where you'd find me in the evening. And she said, well, I got to Gates, and they said, you've got to give up your BlackBerry. And I said, I can't possibly give up my BlackBerry. It's the key to my success. It's the way I've been able to get so much done. They said, you got to give it up. So she said, all right, I'll give it up, but I'm not responsible for what will happen. So what happens? The first week, without her BlackBerry, she's like someone who's just quit smoking. She's in withdrawal. She's reaching for it, dreaming about it, you know, antsy. But the second week, she says, something amazing happened. She said, I felt calmer than I had felt in years, and I was getting more work done, more substantial work done. I was getting more important work done than ever before. I wasn't running around just being a data processor, answering messages, being crazy busy. I was actually sinking my teeth into important work and getting it done. And I think that the take-home point there is not get rid of your BlackBerry, but be really careful how you use it. And that's crucial. You have got to use your technology lest it use you. And what you find is a lot of people unwittingly giving away their time and energy to the technology, sort of becoming, doing what I call screen sucking, just, you know, sitting on a screen hour after hour, sending and receiving relatively trivial messages. And in a way, it's a seduction. In a way, it's a way of avoiding the hard work involved in thinking.
So, Doc, it hurts when I do this. How do I stop?
You stop by recognizing what's going on. You stop by realizing that being crazy busy does not equate with being wildly productive. That, in fact, the people who do the important work are the ones who think. And thinking hurts. You have to recognize that you will find excuses. I love Ernest Hemingway was once asked, how do you write a novel? And he said, well, first of all, you clean out the refrigerator. And what he meant is writing is so painful that a writer will find any excuse not to write. Well, true. I'll bet you programmers, you know, fit the same description. I mean, any work that's difficult will find a reason not to do it. And answering your email is a wonderful excuse. You say, well, I'm productive. I have to do this, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, what I would say is you're not being tough enough with yourself. You've got to prioritize what is the most important work. And your most important work is thinking, planning, strategizing, not answering, you know, 50 emails an hour.
Absolutely. And so how do you switch modes? I have the problem. I get 300 emails a day.
I'll give you an example. I consulted at a high-tech firm in New York City last week, and the woman who runs the place, this executive, after I left, she said, all I did was I took my computer from being in the center of my desk, and I put it on a table behind me. She said, I could still reach it. All I had to do was swivel my chair. But she said the simple act of moving it to a table behind me cut down the number of times I checked my email exponentially. She said when it was right in front of me, it was like a jar of M&Ms. I just reach for it compulsively. Now when it's behind me, I actually have to think, do I want to do this now? And I can stop myself. I can say, no, you got to stay on this project that you're, you know, wrestling with, and you got to keep thinking about it as hard as it is.
What do you think of David Allen's Getting Things Done, which is real popular among the high-tech people I know?
Yeah, I know. I think it's excellent. I think that kind of systematic approach is excellent. You know, I think he's brilliant and very practical. However you slice it, whether you use a book or it comes down to the need to reconstruct boundaries that technology has broken down. So, for example, there was a study done that estimated the average worker in this country loses 2.1 hours a day to unplanned interruptions. Now, you do the math, and that comes out to some $650 billion lost every year. So what's the solution to unplanned interruptions? It's to put up a boundary. Close your door for an hour. I'm thinking, turn off your email. You know, there's no need to check your email every minute. you know, you really have to discipline yourself, that you recreate the boundaries that technology has broken down. You know, after all, you do have to sleep. So, you know, you don't take phone calls during family dinner. You know, it doesn't apply just to the workplace. It applies to your social life as well. Don't take phone calls during family dinner. Or if you're having lunch with a friend, don't get on your cell phone. It's bad for the relationship you're trying to develop. You know, this is, so it's a matter of, and I'm not going to tell a person, you know, you do it whatever way you want to, but that's the guiding principle. You have to recreate barriers that technology has broken down. Because if you don't, if you're a totally permeable membrane, the world will hold you hostage. You will not have a minute to call your own. And you will be crazy busy, and you won't get done what you want to get done. And at the end of the day, you'll feel like a frazzled, wet noodle, and you'll be angry and upset and frustrated. And, you know, that's no way to live. And you won't achieve what you want.
I know a lot of angry, frustrated, and upset micro-ISVs because they're trying to run a business. They have to be responsive to their customers. They may have work on the side as well with clients. They may even be working for somebody full-time, and they're overcommitted. So I guess I would say I'd ask two questions here. One is, what's the best way to get from the place of pain to the place of not pain? Go cold turkey incrementally?
Incrementally, to be sure. But what you need to do is take back control, and you usually have to do that bilaterally. You have to have conversations with your boss, with your clients, with your customers, with your associates, because unilaterally you'll offend people. You know they'll get the wrong message. And believe me, you have this conversation, and the other person will say, "Thank God, I need to do the same thing." And it's just about when I'm available, when I'm not available. You know, if your boss says, "I want you available by email," or "I am all the time," then you say, "Okay, you're the boss, I'll do it. But this is what it's going to cost you in terms of my brain power. And I have no control over that. This is Mother Nature in charge here." You know, so when you interrupt me without, you know, any warning, if you want me to be responsive, I'll do it. But remember, the time it takes me to get back to what I was doing is not instantaneous. I'm not a machine. The brain, you know, doesn't reconstitute itself instantaneously. So you need to have these kinds of conversations with the people you work with, for, above, below, and whatnot, to develop a different culture, a different way of doing business, rather than instantaneous gratification. That method is got to, it's like the old hierarchical management style. It's got to become obsolete. It doesn't work. It doesn't bring out the best in people. The dictator CEO doesn't bring out the best. Well, the instantaneous messenger doesn't bring out the best either. It just overruns people. It's like kudzu. It's like a weed. You become surrounded by messages, and you're not doing any important work.
What about the other part of it, which is too much choice, too many commitments, over-committing? What do you say to yourself? How do you make a boundary with yourself, I guess, maybe is the way to say it.
No, it's exactly. It's like my mother used to tell me at buffets, don't let your eyes be bigger than your stomach, as I would, you know, take, you know, everything and then feel sick afterwards. You know, modern life is the great thing about modern life is you can do so much. The bad thing about modern life is you can do so much. I mean, you really have to develop the ability to say no, or your enthusiasms will absolutely get the better of you. I mean, it comes back to these lessons we learned as children, but now we've got to apply them in ways that we've never had to do before, because we can do so much, but there comes a time when your performance declines. So you just have to say no to this project that you know you'd love to work on, because you've got three that you're working on now that are nowhere near completion. And if you take another, it's like, use another analogy, it's like overplanting a garden. You can have the most beautiful flowers in the world, but if you overplant, none of them will thrive. And a lot of people now have overplanted their gardens, and none of their projects is thriving.
Well, let me ask you, how do you reconcile that with the idea you have in your book of the way you get uncrazy is you do what you want to do as much as possible?
Right.
Because that's what will build your attention and your focus and help you prioritize what you're doing.
Yes. And it'll also create the right emotional atmosphere. And a lot of people underestimate the power of emotion in promoting peak performance and the power of emotion to disrupt performance as well. So we tend to be happiest when we're doing what we're good at and we like. So a guiding principle, you should try to do mostly what you're good at and you like and delegate the rest. Now, you can't always delegate everything, but try to be guided by that principle. Say, you know, what I ought to be doing mostly is what I'm good at, what I like, and then, if possible, it's what other people don't like and what other people are bad at, because that translates into someone's willing to pay you to do it. So you know, you have something that you're good at that you like to do that most other people or many other people aren't so good at and they don't like to do. Well, there's a career. And so you want to do mostly that and then delegate the rest.
Okay. How about environment? And by that I mean, you know, everyone in this business has served their time in a cube farm somewhere. And it's sort of like crazy people making other people more crazy. And I'm wondering if you have any advice as far as basically taking control of your environment, other than the very good advice of reestablishing some of the boundaries that technology has broken down.
You said everyone's worked on a what farm?
A cubicle farm.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, that's a wonderful example of how environment can absolutely create the worst conditions under which to work. And you know, on the face of it, it looks good, but it's very, for most people, does not promote focus, concentration, conviviality, and so on and so forth. It promotes a kind of inhuman sort of feeling. So try to create a physical environment where you can concentrate, focus, you know, where you have some privacy, where you can close a door and actually have privacy, quiet, and be able to think. And also try to create an emotional environment where as little time as possible is spent in sort of toxic states of paranoia and fear. I mean, that really shuts down your brain. So
how do you deal with that? I mean, let's say you have...
You make a friend. You know, you might have a toxic boss and you can't do anything about that, but you make a friend, someone that you look forward to seeing every day. One friend can counteract a toxic culture. So, but you do need one friend. One friend is magical.
So I guess part of this is the message, for lack of a better way of saying it, you know, don't neglect the physical plant here. In other words, you're a human being. You have to act like a human being. You live in a society with other human beings. And as much as we love this technology and soak it up with every bit of our being, we're still people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you don't deny your humanity. I mean, I spent a number of years consulting to the Harvard Chemistry Department, which is another group of, you know, real smart people trying to achieve at a very high level. And the mm-hmm. reason they brought me in is they were having a raft of suicides. Well, it turns out the reason people were killing themselves is they were neglecting the emotional conditions under which they worked, and it was just a paranoid, toxic atmosphere. And they took some very practical steps to change that. For example, they instituted biweekly buffets in the department library, where it used to say no food or drink allowed. Now they bring in this lavish buffet, and these shy graduate students who wouldn't come out for a social would come out for food. And then they started making relationships in spite of themselves, and you know, that kind of intervention. But it all comes back to realizing that you are human, and that you have human needs. You are not a computer. You're not a machine, and you can't run your life as if you were one.
Well, one thing about this business I've noticed over 25 years, it's kind of like how sea people used to be in the past, where the sailor was in love with the sea first. We're all in love with technology, some of us more than anything else. And I'm wondering, if you could sort of wave a magic wand at a few developers, which you could right now, what type of programs or software or changes in software would you like to see that might just help turn down the pressure cooker a bit?
Oh, I would love a program where people could that would walk them through prioritizing and really prompt them, you know, what matters most to you, mm-hmm. and then help them schedule their day so that they didn't get sidetracked. And it, you know, I'm not a programmer, but I know that somebody could do that. It would be a hugely helpful piece of software to help people, you know, untangle the mess they make of the time management and more than time management, priority mismanagement, where they spend more time than they know they should doing things that matter very little, mm-hmm. and less time than they wish they did doing things that matter a lot.
The difference between being effective and efficient?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the only other question I would ask is, what do you tell somebody that you know is crazy busy, but they don't know they're crazy busy?
Most people, you know, I think you need to say it to them in a way where they don't feel you're putting them down,
mm-hmm.
Because then they won't hear it. But if you say something like, you know, you're one of the most brilliant, creative, innovative people I've ever met, and if you didn't try to do so much, in fact, you'd do more. Something like that, which is true. These people, crazy busy people, tend to be our most brilliant, creative, innovative folks. You know, they tend to be victims of their own enthusiasms, and if you could say to them, look, if you didn't commit so much, you would get more done. That your eyes are bigger than your stomach, and I'm telling you this because I admire you so much, and the world needs, you know, what you have to give. And right
I think
now
I need to find a tattoo artist to have that put on my forehead. but there is this pressure of trying to keep up, and with every new opportunity, there's this pressure of, well, wait a second, you know, if I don't do this project, if I don't do this thing, then I'll lose that opportunity, and that opportunity will go away. How do you deal with the sense of loss?
Well, you've got to trust in your investments. It's like Warren Buffett, you know, he buys a stock and holds onto it forever. You've got to trust the investments of time you've made and give them a chance to grow. Instead of impulsively trying to, you know, buy a new stock every day because someone else is buying it, you know. And your investments of time are like buying stock, you know. And if you just keep investing it, you, instead of letting the investments you've already made grow, then nothing will grow that much.
Mm.
So, Dr. Hollowell, I've got a couple of questions for you. The first question is, obviously, you've done a great deal of research into all this. Is there do you have a website? Is there any place on the web where people can go and you know, see some data that might help them convince their boss that they should be driven less crazy?
It would be get the book Crazy Busy. It's a very short book. It's a paperback, it's that you could give to your boss or read yourself. A lot of practical suggestions in it. And again, the title is Crazy Busy, Overstretched, Overbooked, and About to Snap.
All right. Another question is, are you familiar with the new website that's out called Twitter?
No.
So Twitter is a combination of a website and something that people do with their cellular phones where they can type these up to 140-character messages, and people are doing it constantly. It's, oh, I'm going out to dinner, now I'm back home, oh, I'm watching The Simpsons, now I'm going to bed. and then people have friends, certain people like Robert Scoble, who used to work here at Microsoft, has, I don't know, 3,000 friends, people that follow his every move. And for some people, I mean, this is clearly almost an opiate-like,
it's pure smack.
Drug, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't know. They, of course, they call blackberries crackberries, some people,
right.
But this is just exactly that. So, and it seems to me the combination of the, you know, the always wanting to know what's really going on up to the minute, combine that with, I think that there may be a sort of personality trait that makes people good developers that may not necessarily make them good boundary setters.
Right.
I mean, I worked at home when my daughter, who's now 21, was a baby, and I used to use the analogy of the old acrobats they used to perform on places like the Ed Sullivan Show, where they had these mm-hmm. plates spinning on the top of sticks.
Yes.
And exactly. I would always say, okay, I've got to get all the plates spinning, and then once I get all the context established, then I can actually think or create.
Yes.
And every time someone would say, well, can you just take out 5 minutes to go do something?
Yes.
That 5 minutes turned into a half an hour because I had to reestablish all the context.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what people don't realize, that, you know, that it's a whole, it's not a trivial amount of time to reconstitute.
And so are there, do you think there eventually will be support groups for busy holics?
There already are.
I'm sure there are, exactly. But honestly, I want to leave your listeners with the simple fact that they don't need anything other than the resolve to do it. I mean, you know, you really can take back control. Now, you have to have conversations with other people. You can't do it unilaterally, but you can start, you know, really making the most out of your gifts rather than feeling frustrated at how you're underachieving if you'll simply take back control that you've given away without knowing it.
Well, one more question I have, because we are a very tech-oriented bunch here, and unfortunately, it's easier for people to, in my world, to give up relationships with other people than it is to turn off computers or turn off programs or turn off projects. And I'm wondering if you have any advice about, is there a case of knowing too many people online? Is that part of the issue here? Or is it really coming down to just that we've let down all of our boundaries in seeking that connection, and now we've got way too much input?
Yeah, exactly. It's the latter. You have to limit. And again, it is like a drug. I mean, you know, you have to limit the amount of inputs, you know, you'll receive. You absolutely must, or pay the price. I mean, you know, or you'll be overstretched, overbooked, about to snap. You'll be frustrated that you're not seeing, you know, the great results you ought to see. And if you can't, you know, if you're such the victim of your enthusiasms that you literally can't say no, then you're never going to achieve the results that you hope to achieve.
Well, on that note, it sounds to me like people ought to go, and especially micro-ISVs, having found myself in that situation a million times in the last 20 years, go get a copy of your book and find out what it's all about.
Well, I hope you'll do that, and I would love to hear from people, because I love feedback. If you want to email me, my email address is ehallowell@aol.com.
All right, and there will be a blog entry with a link to you and your email address there on Channel 9, and people will also be able to reply right there to that thread. So when the show is posted up there, I will send you a link to that so that you can watch and see if people ask questions and reply to them directly there.
Oh, wonderful. Thanks a million.
All right. Well, that's it for this edition of the Micro-ISV Show with today's guest, Dr. Edward Hollowell, and his book, Crazy Busy. Hopefully you listen to this particular podcast at maybe 1.4 times the speed and reduce the amount of time until you can go and get some help for your bizaholic addiction. And I know I certainly have to do that often myself. And this is Michael Lehman, technology evangelist for Microsoft. Check out projectglidepath.net. And for Bob Walsh and his new book, Clear Blogging, at clearblogging.com, and Safari Software, we'll see you next time on Channel 9.